Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in English with a concentration in literature studies and an MFA in creative writing. strose.edu/gradprograms.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Joe Gannon is a writer and spoken word artist. He was also a freelance journalist during the Sandinista Revolution, writing for the Christian Science Monitor and the San Francisco Examiner. In his new novel, Night of the Jaguar, he takes readers to the land of Nicaragua in the mid-80s, a place recovering from one conflict and descending into another. In the novel, we meet Ajax Montoya, a hero of the Sandinista Revolution who now battles his nightmares as a police captain. The new novel is Night of the Jaguar, and we welcome Joe Gannon to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
This seems to be one of those very clear cases of write what you know in some way.
Yes.
Of you have experience in this place, and I assume it was at that time that the seeds started to be planted that, yes, I could make a novel out of this.
Yeah, I found myself actually taking bits and pieces that was left over from the journalism that wouldn't fit into a story. And I first began composing them in letters home to friends. I mean, this is back when snail mail was all we had. Then I began to kind of invent some things, and I'd lay them into the letters as well. And a friend of mine wrote back one time and was like, geez, what the things that happened to you? And I realized that these fictional bits were convincing people. That they thought I was actually telling them the truth. So I began to slide a little bit more into the idea of writing a novel. But at the time, I was really out of my depth. I mean, I could do journalism. I didn't really understand, you know, how to write a novel. So I got to about page 40, and that's as far as I got, and I put it away for a long time.
I have always heard from journalists who have started to write fiction that ultimately it can be a little scary, but once you're there, you find this tremendous freedom in being able to tell the story that you want and not encumbered by the facts that you would have to tell in a journalistic story, of course.
Yes. Yeah, that was particularly true for American journalism, because there's a different kind of journalism in Britain and in France. And in American journalism, you have to quote someone saying that today is, you know, actually Thursday. So that was an incredible freedom. Once I started to hit my stride in the novel, it was just, you know, it has its own challenges, but there is an amazing freedom there.
What brought you to Nicaragua as a freelance journalist?
I had graduated from UMass Amherst. During that time, I'd had an internship at an international news agency in New York. So I was down there for the summer, and the next summer I graduated, and they offered me a job. There was an editor there named Peter Ford who was just leaving. I was taking his place. He was going to Nicaragua to work as a freelance journalist. So I spent 3 years in a basement office at the UN editing other people's copy. For example, this stuff a friend of mine was sending back from the Philippines when they overthrew Marcos and the People's Power Revolution. And I remember thinking first, I could, you know, the copy was a mess. It took me hours to, like, fix it. And I thought, I could do this, and I should be out there somewhere like that doing it. And Nicaragua, people maybe forget, but after the Soviet Union, it was the major foreign policy concern of the Reagan administration for years. So it was a big story. It was a huge story. I spoke some Spanish, and it was kind of in the neighborhood still, being in the Americas. So I just gave in my notice, packed up one bag, and showed up in Nicaragua where this friend of mine already was. So I had a little place to crash. And eventually he moved on to Buenos Aires, and I inherited the Christian Science Monitor string from him.
And as you mentioned, this is a major story. So as you enter the equation, where are we in that story and what are you starting to cover?
Well, in 1986, you were just beginning to, I think the rulers, the leaders in Central America were realizing that the Reagan administration would be gone in a couple of years and something had to be done. And this actually comes up in the novel as well, about the Contra Army that the American government and the CIA in particular had constructed. There was thousands of them. They were larger than some national armies in Central America. And they were considered by Central American presidents a real danger once the Americans moved on. So the war was heating up. There was new weapons being given, Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, but it was just beginning to tip towards a regional peace plan, which by 1989 everyone had solved, had signed, and all the wars, Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, all began to come to a close. So I arrived right at the height of the Contra War, but just about a year before it started tipping into diplomacy.
How welcome were journalists there at this time?
You know, the dangers facing journalists have been, unfortunately, back in the news again with what was going on in the Middle East. You know, you're not welcome anywhere, but there's not a lot. at the time, there wasn't a lot you could do. The Nicaraguan government, the Sandinistas, wanted and needed to befriend journalists because they needed a line into the American people. The country was shut down by the blockade. They weren't allowed to come to the United States, many of the diplomats. So they certainly needed the international press corps. And Nicaragua, despite the war, was a very safe place to be a journalist. El Salvador, journalists were even more, I think, despised openly by the government, the army in particular, and that political bloc that was known as the death squads. That was a far more dangerous place to work. I was there one weekend in March 1989. Six journalists were killed in 48 hours. I think there was maybe one journalist killed in Nicaragua between 1978 and 1990 when the Sandinistas left power.
One of the things that you get out of the novel is that this is a huge issue in a very small place.
That's a very good point. I hadn't thought of that, Joe. That's exactly it. Nicaragua, in a way, was the last battle of the Cold War. The United States and the Soviet Union facing off. They fought proxy wars in many places. Nicaragua was really the last one. And it was the great tragedy of the country. I mean, Ronald Reagan in the early 80s had built it up as this danger, this existential threat to America. He talked about them overrunning Brownsville, Texas, you know, that San Jose, Costa Rica was closer to Washington, D.C. than San Jose, California. And yet this was in 1981 to 83. By 1985 or 86, Gorbachev had come to power. There was glasnost and perestroika, and the Cold War was winding down a little bit. And then, of course, by 1989, the Soviet Union had collapsed. The Berlin Wall had come down. Communism was gone. Ronald Reagan was gone. And a country like Nicaragua was left really broken because of what had gone on all those years. But for Central American standards, a large country, but was also like very empty. There was only 4 million people in the whole place. And as I mentioned, and was true at the time, in 1986, when the novel is set, in the entire country of Nicaragua, there was 4 elevators and 1 escalator, and the escalator didn't work. It was that kind of place.
Joe Gannon is our guest. The name of the book is Night of the Jaguar, published by Minotaur Books. As I mentioned, the protagonist of this novel is Ajax Montoya. He is a hero of the Sandinista Revolution and then is in a role of a police captain. What brought you to this particular character?
Well, first of all, I think I based him upon an actual person, Omar Cabezas, who was one of the comandantes of called the Comandante Guerrillero, meaning he'd been a leader of soldiers during the war against the dictatorship. He wrote a worldwide best-selling memoir called Fire from the Mountain. And I remember I took that book and I color Xeroxed the front. It was a picture of Omar Cabezas. And it was his tale of the hardships, I mean, the devastating hardships of actually fighting that kind of a prolonged guerrilla war against a well-established dictator with a very big army. And that's what struck me was the cost, the personal cost. All of this is lost later on in the Cold War politics, but the personal cost of spending that many years up in the mountains when it was quixotic at best, suicidal at worst, to even be taking up that kind of fight. So he's the man, certainly, I had in mind.
Let me just talk to you about the marketing side of this, and then we'll get back to the character. But as you started this, was it always your intention to say, okay, I have this character, I want it to be a series?
No, actually, it's interesting. In writing it, I was actually getting an MFA from Pine Mariner College. This was my creative thesis, so I was working on it like that. And I kind of got stuck in the middle, and then the ending occurred to me. So I wrote the last line in the novel before I had really finished the rest of it. But when I wrote it, I thought, dang, that sounds like, you know, there's another book. And that got stuck in the back of my mind. Then as people began to read it, they said, you're obviously going to write another book. And then when I was lucky enough to get an agent in New York, she said she would not even try to sell the book unless I had a detailed synopsis for the second one, because it was clear. But I had not begun it until I was told by her I was working on a different project altogether.
Right. So then you have this character, as I mentioned, Ajax Montoya. He is a former hero of the movement, and now he's a homicide cop. And he gets on this case that nobody wants him to go anywhere near because it's so rife with danger.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of that hot potato. At one point, however, without spoiling too much, the villain in the book also points out that if they don't want this case to be pursued, they should give it to him because in the eyes of many, he's become this drunken mistake. He does not fare well. The clarity of war appeals to this guy really well. The fuzzy reality of peace, the wooliness of it, doesn't. So he begins to drift away from his comrades, from the cause. You know, he gets caught up in the Cold War. He just is not an ideologue. And then he takes to drink. He's implicated in an assassination he had nothing to do with. And as a result, he withdraws from public life, takes up drink, gets divorced, and becomes this lonely kind of wretch. And he's actually farmed out to the police. Like, this is a hero. We can't cut him loose. Stick him in the homicide squad, because Nicaragua has a very low homicide rate when there's not a war going on. So he's kind of been left there to kind of gather dust and, you know, till they can ship him off somewhere else. This case falls in his lap, and suddenly he's right back into the middle of everything he thought he'd left.
Yeah, you get the idea of he's put there, and the thought is, well, what's the worst that could happen? So then this,
right.
then comes the murder, and what's fascinating about the character is how ultimately his time as a war hero, how those skills really help him in his job.
Yes, that's true. He kind of keeps himself very sharp. To himself, he's never, like, gone to fat. He hasn't lost his edge. But it appears that way to everyone because he doesn't care. I mean, his drunkenness becomes legendary. But he finally gets sober, though. He gets word, this is kind of mentioned early in the novel, that they're going to cut him loose. Like, they're tired of, as he says, the missed formations, the drunken insubordination. They're tired of it. He gets the heads up from his one remaining friend and makes himself sober. But the problem is, as it says on the dust jacket, he begins to lose his mind shortly after he regains his sobriety. So it's this balance between, does he remain a drunk stay sober and possibly go insane? He begins to have visitations at night, hallucinations. He really is adrift. He's not sure what is reality and what isn't. And then he stumbles into this murder that turns out to be much bigger than anyone imagines.
How much of a fan of the genre are you?
I'm a huge fan. And long before I began to write it, I mean, I can remember as a kid, I read all the Travis McGee stories. I read all of Dashiell Hammett, Raymond Chandler. In fact, when I was in Nicaragua thinking about this book, I remember a rainy day. I sat on my bed. I had The Maltese Falcon on video. I was watching it. I had my collection of Dashiell Hammett open to that novel. And I went through the novel as the movie progressed and saw how did John Huston adapt this from the novel. And it's verbatim. He just, everything in the film is in the novel. So I've read a lot of them. James Ellroy, I'm a big, huge fan of him, Dennis Lehane. So I read a lot of the genre. In fact, I'm waiting now. I kind of have stopped reading, waiting for James Ellroy's new novel, Perfida, to show up at my door.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is interesting about that, of that background of liking the genre and having a great reverence for it, because I feel that in reading the book, because this is a character that while has many overtones of the classic crime thriller, and the protagonist is different because of the background and ultimately because of the setting.
Yes, I think there's a balance between some characters like Jack Reacher. You think of them as being like an operative. Right. Ajax is a private. I mean, he's a police captain. He's a detective, but he has that aspect as well because of his background. He's able to operate almost as like a special forces soldier when he goes off to the war zone to essentially question the leader of this Contra command. He wants to eliminate him as a suspect. He's putting himself in incredible danger, but he has the skills that make it possible for him to go to a war zone and stare down an enemy and yet still behave like a policeman, you know, conduct an interrogation and know when someone's lying and when they're telling the truth.
And there is still, ultimately, at the core, this switch of what is right and what is wrong.
Well, that's what I think attracts me to the genre. No matter, and Elmore Leonard did this as well, but no matter the failings of the detective, in crime fiction, that character must be the person whose moral compass can always find true north. Ajax, people will think he's a bloody-minded guy. I mean, he is compelled to kill people in this book. He's a drunk. He's possibly insane. But his moral compass always points north. Elmore Leonard did that with a range of like characters. And it's called like the in theory, it's called the gentleman thief. Now, you can have the gentleman thief and he's a criminal, but he's always superior to the villains in the book. And I think this is true of Ajax. He's hardly an ideal citizen at all. And yet compared to the others, he knows where the moral true north is. His whole point is this man has been murdered, a citizen. He gave sons to the revolution. All of these reasons for why his murderer should be forgiven, why this should be overlooked, is a betrayal of what I spent years in the mountains fighting for. He tells people what we spent years fighting for. And that's what I think is the great appeal of the genre, is that that character, detectives, first of all, can traverse all social classes, but they always know where true north is on the moral compass.
And as messed up as he is personally, you look at what is going on in the country and going on in the aftermath of this revolution, and he ultimately becomes a calm in the storm.
That's a very good way of putting it. And considering that he's like alcoholic, he's suicidal, he's somewhat homicidal as well, that he becomes that calm center, this was what I was hoping people would get from the novel and from the character, that they might worry about his sanity, worry if he's going to make it at all, but trust his judgment about what is the right thing to do against all comers. And everyone in the novel is coming at him, is telling him, you've got this all wrong.
Right. Joe Gannon is our guest. The name of the book is Night of the Jaguar. It is published by Minotaur Books. We've touched on this and you've talked about it, but I want to dig in a little bit deeper, and that is the psychological aspect and what he is facing in the concern of his sanity. And was that something in your time as a journalist there that you saw the effect that the revolution was having on people, on their emotions?
I think there's a line in the book, there's someone dies and a lot of Ajax's old comrades from the insurrectionary days go to this funeral, and he looks around and he thinks to himself, there's a lot of compañeros here who have dealt with the aftermath of war by turning to drink. And you could see that. You would go to social gatherings of fairly high-ranking Sandinista officials, and you could see those who had spent the most time in war, in violence, who had killed and almost been killed themselves, you know, they tended to get drunk first, and they tended to get loud when they were. So I think that definitely had effect on those actors. But then it also became a country at war, and through all the years that I was there, and you could see there was a bit of a psychosis in some people, particularly soldiers. I mean, I met and spoke to a couple of soldiers in hospitals this was almost before, you know, post-traumatic stress syndrome was coined. And they were just, it was the old shell shock. I mean, there was just nobody home. You would look at them and there was just vacant eyes staring back at you. So I think the psychological cost was there to see, but kind of in the way you might have found it in England during the Blitz. I mean, it was The country had been at war essentially since 1977, and this was almost like 11 years later. In a place like El Salvador, you saw it even more because you had the addition of terror. There was a mechanism of terror of the soldiers who'd patrol the streets of San Salvador with machetes strapped to their backs. I mean, that's, you know, cut back the hedgerows in the city. So there you would find it, I think, even more pronounced. But then you had the savagery of death squads and disappearances. The wars in Nicaragua tended to be pretty far away. You had to drive hours to find the Contra and to find the war. In a place like El Salvador, the possibility of horrendous death was everywhere. And the streets were often littered with corpses after something happened.
Mm. I was speaking to a journalist from Kiev, and he had just come from Ukraine, first trip to the United States. And what fascinated me is we were talking about what it was going to be like for him to go back. And he said, you know, you get used to being on edge and have that feeling of war, that after years and years and years and years, there is a sense of normalcy because it is what is normal. And I assume it was a very similar case.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think if you're someone, I mean, I went to Nicaragua and Central America for everything that was happening there. But I also had a home there. I have known some journalists who go from one hot spot to another to cover that particular conflict at the moment, and then we'll move to the next conflict and the next conflict. Right. It's different, I think, if you go settle in a place that happens to be at war. If you jump from the Ukraine to Syria or Iraq or somewhere in West Africa and then go back, I think that is would have a much deeper psychological impact on you. And you see that with photographers as well. There's an incredible documentary called Shooter about this war photographer who acknowledged he had just become addicted to it. He was like that character in Apocalypse Now who can't wait to get back to Vietnam. He could not stay away from it. And eventually he is killed, I believe, in Russia, in the Caucasus regions. I mean, you could see he just could not help himself. My experience was different because I moved to this one place. I lived there. I had friends and connections there. So it's easier to maintain your center covering a conflict in the country you're living rather than bouncing around. We called it parachuting in from one conflict to another. And I was a freelancer, as were these guys who were recently murdered in Syria. And freelancers, you know, you got to work harder. There's no steady paycheck. Mm. You got to sell. You got a lot of competition. You take more chances. My experience was nothing like theirs. But there was a couple of times when I would just go out on my own and to find the rebels in El Salvador or the Contras in Nicaragua. And then I would be scolded by people when I got back. Like, you never, ever traveled alone. But you know, you're under the pressure to get there. And I think these freelancers in conflicts now are more vulnerable for that reason. They're going in kind of unprotected and pushing the edge.
So as we wrap up, how do you see this character of Ajax Montoya progressing and aging?
Well, the St. Martins actually bought the second book from me as well. I've got to hand that in about a month, so that's pretty much done. The first one, Night of the Jaguar, is Nicaragua, 1986. We jump 3 years ahead. When you get to the end of the book, as I think you mentioned earlier, you see he's got to go off. There's right. one more mission he's got.
Right.
Well, he undertakes that mission, but most of the book takes place in 1989 in El Salvador. That was the end of that very savage war. There was a huge battle between government and rebel troops in November of that year, and he goes there and he gets caught up. My task really was, he's in such a bad place when this book starts off, how do I put him in an even worse place? Because I can't fix him. If I fix him, nobody would be interested in him anymore.
Right.
So once I figured out how to set him off, begin him in a worse place, much worse, actually, than the first book. Then you're back to wondering, okay, so he survived the first book, but now look at him. Like, what will happen now? And there's several characters from that book who will be, I mean, his partner in this book, Gladys Dario, the young lieutenant, will remain his partner in the next book. So it jumps ahead 3 years. It's in El Salvador. And it's still a question of, you know, is he actually going to make it out? Is he actually going to, like, step over the edge to and become homicidal? So that book should be out, I think, in the fall of 2015 or very early in 2016.
Well, the name of the new book is Night of the Jaguar. It is published by Minotaur Books. Joe Gannon, thank you very much for spending time with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure to come here, Joe. I'm a big fan of the show, too, man. So this is really something for me.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Joe Gannon's new book is Night of the Jaguar, published by Minotaur. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.